You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 30th, 2017.
I've probably rewritten this book 50 times. And then last year, I finally said, I have to get this done because it wouldn't leave me alone.
Bloomington author Annette Oppenlander discusses her writing, including a coming-of-age novel set in World War II Germany. That's coming up later in the show in today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about plans for Bloomington parks. But first, these local headlines.
The city of Bloomington will not annex a group of unincorporated properties just northeast of the city, known as Annexation Area 6. That was the only piece of news from last night's six-hour city council meeting that pleased opponents of the plan to annex thousands of acres of county land. Otherwise, the council agreed to go forward with consideration of annexing six other areas, including land that surrounds most of the rest of the city. During the public comment section last night, Monroe County Commissioner Julie Thomas, who is also a board member at WFHB, suggested that Area 6 is not urban enough to be annexed into the city. The area includes a group of relatively high-valued properties just west of Rural Road and south of Lanham Road.
The Bloomington Growth Policies Plan reflects a clear interest in growing up rather than out and maintaining the character of the city. These are highlights of your GPP. A number of city councilors here have run for office opposed to sprawl. Great, and you've worked very hard on that. But is this no longer a guiding principle for this city council? Second, and on the same point, what tracts of agricultural land, the dirt road known as Lanham, the livestock, the barns, and the horse farm is urban? This connects again with the issue of sprawl, and I implore you to look at a Google Earth map and then look at this map, lay them over one another, and see if you really think that those boundaries should be where they're proposed to be.
Property owners in annexed areas are expected to generally pay higher taxes. In exchange, the city would provide services including police, fire, and trash pickup, but many property owners say they wouldn't be getting enough in return for their money. Still, Bloomington Controller Jeff Underwood argues there's reason for Area 6 to be included in the city.
These are people that work, live, and play inside the corporate limits. If there's anything, they're connected to the city. They're right next to the city. It's an area that's going to continue to develop out Highway 45. At some point, you know, they say that they're on septic, and that is correct. At some point, those septic systems are going to fail, and they're going to want sewers because these are not homes that are of low value. These are very high AV homes. Most of these people will hit the caps, 65%. It's the highest one. It's an area that the hospital is going to move into. The area, people are going to be attracted to that area. I think it's a case of, you know, if there's a case for an area directly contiguous to the city that is considered the city, that this is a great example of that.
Many county property owners are legally barred from opposing the annexation during an official remonstrance process. That's because at some point they signed waivers in order to get services from the Bloomington Utilities Department. But Area 6 is relatively unique because most of its property owners have not signed waivers. One resident of Area 6, Beth Silverstein, told the council she and her neighbors were prepared to fight the annexation.
As has been said, you got our petition with about 93% of the homeowners saying, do not annex us. We will remonstrate if we are forced to, but as I understand it, if we successfully remonstrate and incur legal fees, the city can be held liable for those legal fees. So for everyone's benefit, including the city, I ask that you take Area 6 out of consideration for annexation and save everyone time, money, and energy.
During a discussion that lasted until long after midnight, members of the City Council acknowledged that Area 6 property owners would probably be successful in remonstrating against an annexation. Ultimately, the council voted 7-2 not to go forward with attempts to annex the area, which again is just northeast of city limits. Council President Susan Sandberg and Council Member Tim Mayer were the only members to vote for that annexation. During the meeting, the council approved several other resolutions agreeing to consider annexing the six other proposed areas. Three of those areas surround the city, the other three are islands, meaning they're unincorporated properties that are entirely surrounded by city property.
The Ellisville Fire Department continues to operate on a shoestring despite increased call volumes, according to Ellisville Fire Chief Mike Kornman. Kornman presented the fire department's 2016 annual report to the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission at their meeting last night.
We are still between $75,000 to $100,000 short. We are hoping and praying that the Local Income Tax Council will meet this year, and we're going to propose to ask for some money to keep us going.
In addition to the town of Ellisville, the Ellisville Fire Department serves the Westside Economic Development Area, an unincorporated area of Monroe County just west of Bloomington. That area is also called the Westside TIF. Kornman said prior to 2003, his department had 20 calls annually from the area. Now the department receives about 200 calls annually from the Westside. And Kornman says he doesn't have the personnel to support that volume. Kornman also said that 80% of what he called mutual aid calls come from within the Westside TIF. Kornman said Van Buren Township, Bloomington Township, and Ellisville collaborate to respond to those calls.
Well, we did start last year between the town of Ellisville, Richland Township, and Van Buren Township was a possibility of forming a fire protection territory, joining our forces into one. And that came to a screeching halt here a couple months ago with the we found out about annexation. So, because obviously it's changing the focus.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton has proposed that the city of Bloomington annex more than 15 square miles of land surrounding Bloomington, including some areas that are currently served by the Ellisville Fire Department. Commission member Jim Sherman and Chairman Barry Lasseau asked Kornman how the annexation would impact his plans to locate stations and equipment, given the department's coverage area may be changing.
It's a very possibility that we would have to lose three full-time at Ellisville, three full-time and possibly a full-time equivalents, basically six personnel. And the station on Curry Pike doesn't really need to be there if it's inside the city limits.
Kornman said Ellisville would still be responsible for the south and southwest parts of the county. He says the fire department's plans are influenced not only by Bloomington's proposed annexation, but also by the potential for future annexations.
We don't want to put a fire station at Hart Strait and Vernal because we have an opinion this is probably not the first annexation. This will probably be phase one of maybe two or three down the road. And obviously with their urbanization plan that we noticed in their most recent document of last week that we wouldn't want to put a fire station there. We don't want to build a couple million-dollar fire station and have it annexed a year later. So we're looking at the long-term things as well.
Kornman said there is still time to figure out how to provide the best coverage for county's residents before annexation goes into effect in 2020.
The Indiana House of Representatives has approved legislation that takes aim at teachers' unions. Supporters of the bill have described it as simply promoting transparency. But teachers, Democrats, and union officials say the aim is clearly to weaken teacher unions. Senate Bill 407 was passed with a 60-38 vote on Tuesday and was returned to the Senate without amendments. The legislation would require school employers to submit information regarding teacher memberships in unions. The bill requires the Indiana Education Employment Relations Board to gather the number of union memberships in a school corporation in order to publish online as data. The published data would not include information that could identify a school employee, but Monroe County Education Association President Paul Farmer says he has concerns with the bill.
It's only designed to find ways to to get people out of the associations and not to join and find easier ways and that type of stuff to get out of the association. So I think as far as education goes, I don't see that there's any positive educational value in the bill.
In addition to data compilation, the Education Employment Relations Board is tasked with creating videos and training modules that inform school employees of their representation rights as a union member. They would also be responsible for contacting select union members to teach them how to change their representation status. Teachers would also be notified each school year if the union membership fell below 50% in their school corporation. Farmer believes this is an unnecessary complication of the unions and the IEERB requirements. He also said the bill would decrease the power of unions.
As far as ISTA goes, and our local association here, this bill, its only design is to find ways to lower the power, or I'll use the term political power, of the association in the state of Indiana.
The bill now goes to the desk of Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, who will decide whether to make it law.
The Indiana Military Veterans Hall of Fame is looking for nominations for its next group of honorees. As many as 15 veterans will join the current 46 men and women who have been honored by the organization. To be eligible, veterans must have been born in Indiana, entered military service in Indiana, and lived in Indiana for at least 8 years. All ages and all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces are eligible, whether or not they are living or deceased. Nominations can be submitted online at the Indiana Military Veterans Hall of Fame website and will be accepted until August 1st of this year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Bloomington author Annette Oppenlander was a success in finance and banking, as well as public relations, and then, late in life, realized she loved writing. She's authored 3 young adult science fiction fantasies, and this month has released her 4th novel, a coming-of-age love story set in World War II Germany, entitled Surviving the Fatherland. Much of the story is based on the experiences of her parents and grandparents, who themselves survived the ravages of the Third Reich and the war. Annette joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week, Annette Oppenlander. She is the writer of several historical books and young adult fiction as well. Thanks for coming in, Annette.
Hello, Michael. Thank you for having me.
You have a new book out called Surviving the Fatherland. You know a little bit about Germany.
Yes, I do. I was born there and went to school there, went to university, had an internship there in banking, and then came over to the U.S. after my degree to work for a year, and then return and start my big career. And instead, I went to a Super Bowl party where I sat next to a man who I then married a year later.
And what is more American than a Super Bowl party?
That's right, and I had no idea what Super Bowl was or how football works.
Let me give a listing of some of your previous books. You started publishing in the year 2015.
That's right.
That year, A Different Truth came out. Also that year, Escape from the Past, The Duke's Wrath. That was the start of a trilogy of books. There was Escape from the Past, Book 2, The Kid. That was 2016. And then in that same year, there was Escape from the Past, Book 3, At Witch's End.
Well, it's also using historical settings, and it's basically about a young gamer, a teenager, who tries out an experimental game because he thinks he can handle anything. And this experimental game sends him back in time to medieval Germany, where he meets a duke and a knight who actually lived there during that time, late 15th century, in a castle in Thuringia, Germany.
You mean real historical figures?
Yes, that's correct. I went to Germany in 2012 and visited this old ruin, which was really an amazing place. You walk through there and it was like the walls were talking to you. And I came across this little story about this Knight Werner, this famous knight who lived there and was in love with a beautiful woman and in a big feud with an evil duke. And I thought at the time, this is the perfect story. And then I dug into the history of the castle and the history of those figures. And I had this idea about this gamer because I have two boys who gamed and they drove me crazy at times. And I thought, what can I do to sort of get even a little bit? And so I created this young man who then time travels back in time and he has to deal with all these medieval problems, the dirt, the filth, well, obviously not fitting in. And then, of course, he has to figure out how to get back to present day.
Can we expect more in this series?
Well, I've had people say they wanted more, but I think at this point I don't foresee it.
What made you become a writer?
Well, had you asked me this 30 years ago, I would have said, no way. You must be crazy, because I would have not ever thought this would happen. I always liked to write, and for a while I worked for a local PR firm here in town, Hirons, and I really enjoyed the nonfiction writing. And I started writing fiction in the 1990s. We lived in the woods in Washington State, and I wrote little children's stories. I really didn't know much about writing or publishing, but it was something that got me started. And then I really got serious in 2002. I interviewed my parents about their experience as war children in World War II. And when I started writing down their stories, it made me feel so different. I felt so good. And it was a real, I really discovered this passion late in life.
Really?
And so when I did it and then created these stories and these, well, situations, it made me feel sort of powerful. And the other part that I discovered was that I really enjoyed history.
Yeah.
And because I also have this sort of analytical side to me, and I love research. So I would go back and research all sorts of things. And because to do historical fiction correctly, you have to do a lot of research and make sure that the setting is right.
Now, interestingly, you brought up your family, talking about your parents and their story and beginning that process in 2002. I also saw some references in some other bios of you that say you knew that there was a family history in Hitler's Germany, but it wasn't talked about all the time. Is that what the case was?
Yes, my parents would once in a while comment on something, but there was never a coherent story being told. And their parents, who were, of course, adults during World War II, who were in some way or fashion involved, obviously, in the daily life, they never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a word, really. And my parents would sometimes talk about the hunger they experienced. My father actually slaughtered a horse.
Ah.
He traded clothes with a horse soldier who wanted to defect. And so he got this horse. And that's one of the scenes in the book where he and a friend slaughter this horse in the middle of the night, because being caught with a horse that is obviously a war horse would have been grounds for execution at the time.
Apparently, your mother and her mother had a challenging relationship that plays into this story.
Yes, my mother did not get along with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So her mother really enjoyed or liked the younger brother and pretty much doted on him. So once the father was out of the picture and in the war, my mother was pretty much left to her own devices. And she told me she never got hugged.
Oh.
I mean, for a little girl who is 7 or 8 years old and goes through this hell with bombings and everything else, never to get hugged and seeing sort of this love lavished on this brother must have been horrible. I've probably rewritten this book 50 times over the years.
Yeah.
It was my first novel.
Yeah.
And so 2002, 2009, I had a first draft. I worked with an editor. I thought, oh, this is it. And it wasn't it. It was my first novel, so it was not ready. And then last year in the fall, I finally said, I have to get this done because it wouldn't leave me alone. Uh-huh. It would always come back.
And nagging.
Nagging, that's yeah. right.
Annette Oppenlander was a success in many fields until she really discovered that what she wanted to do with her life was write books. Her most recent book, Surviving the Fatherland. Annette, thanks so much for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for all small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, where do we stand on People's Park? August last year, Mayor Hamilton announced the downtown safety and civility efforts. In January this year, cameras were installed in People's Park, and in February, the final report on the deliberative dialogue process was issued by the city. On February 16, 2017, the Safety, Civility and Justice Task Force began meeting. We have listened to the voices in People's Park during the process. Here are their concerns and opinions.
You know what needs to change about People's Park is the idiots in this park. And I'm not talking about just homeless people. There's college kids, too, that come over here and break glass and trash this park. It's not just homeless. It's college kids, too. This is everybody's park. Homeless, college students, families, it's for everybody.
As far as the petition that's going around, I don't agree with it. I mean, this park is not just for us that hang out here that are homeless because we have no other place to go, but this is for everybody. But the thing is me, my buddy Leprechaun, and very few friends that we know respect us and know who we are and know what we're about, and we're about respecting the whole community. Anybody want to come to People's Park can come to People's Park. That's why it's called People's Park. It's not my park. It's not Rick's park. It's not Leprechaun's park. It's not John's park. It's not Tim's park. It's People's Park.
Well, honestly, I think that people here, they just try to do the best they can. You know, people in Bloomington to go to IU and everything. I don't think they need to be rude to us or anything like they usually are.
I think some things need to change. I think people need to be more responsible for like their trash and stuff. Like they don't bother to pick it up. We're out here homeless living in the park, but you can't even pick up the park. No wonder you're homeless. What'd your house look like? And whenever I fell, I didn't have family or anybody else I could call on. You know, it's a lot harder to dig yourself out of the hole when you're doing it by yourself. Yeah, there's community resources, but it's hard to, you know, get into them because there's so many people needing them. There's only so many places at the shelter. They don't have winter shelter or, you know, overnight shelters all year long. They have one shelter for men and women, and there's only so many beds, and there's X many number of homeless people.
A lot of people, when they walk by, they look at all of us in the park, and they want to run away, it's not the fact that, you know, you didn't wake up one morning and want to become homeless. We all come to the park, you know, we all try to treat the park as like it was our own backyard.
I think something should change. Maybe they could just leave us be. That'd be cool.
They need to quit trashing the place, because I'm homeless myself. And I come down here every morning and help them clean up. I mean, I'm an alcoholic, but I can find a trash can. To Sarah, who may command me anything, bid me to live and I shall live to honor thy decree. Or bid me death and I shall dare in death to die for thee. Or bid me to weep and I shall weep while I have eyes to see. Or bid me despair and I'll despair under the cypress tree. Or bid me to love and I'll give thee a heart as big sound and free as in the whole world I can't find the heart I'll give to thee. For thou my light, my love, my life, and may command me anything.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Carly Van Cleve and Kathy Norton, along with Joe Crawford and Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.